the truth is one's own property. And that separates you out from everyone else. It makes it impossible for people with different versions of the truth to get along at all. And it creates probably more horrors than any other, and in any other form. It's the largest circle that is possible to draw. As far as I know, for human beings, the largest organizations that there are, the largest senses of identity, are religious ones. I don't think there's anything on earth as big as a religion in terms of the number of people who claim membership in it, who identify themselves by it. So it's the biggest circle you can draw. And there's 2, 3, 4, half a dozen such circles in the world. And between them, they create untold havoc. And they don't recognize in themselves the qualities that they're rejecting in the others. That's a form of projection, I guess. Anyway, we're sort of going off the subject here. I'm beginning to do a rant. Sorry about that, guys. It's not what my intention was. What I want to do at the end of all this, and we're kind of coming to the end of it, I want to sort of take it in, make it kind of come full circle. A circle is appropriate here. The pentacle, closed off, sealed, set aside, set apart from everything else, bouncing against everything else and opposed to everything else, produces the possibility of and even becomes the symbol of evil. But the pentagram, which is the star without the circle around it, the pentagram is a symbol of light. Just as the pentacle is what is physical, what you can touch, what's immediate and close, the pentagram is spirit instead of physical. It's far away instead of close. It's perfect instead of imperfect. It's everything that you could hope for, everything that you would wish to attain. It's quite a lovely symbol for a reaching upwards. I think at the very beginning, one of you had mentioned that the figure of the human being was reaching upwards. There's an upward striving. And in that topmost point of the pentacle, of the pentagram rather, in the topmost point of the star, there's the reaching for that extreme, pure, distant spirit, which of course is exactly what we are to begin with. We're only trying to get hold of what we are already. And all that would be needed to accomplish that would be the erasing of the circle. If you had an eraser, if you had a pencil with an eraser, and you could erase the circle around the star, all of its limitations would drop away, and it would become simply a symbol of light. And so it could be said that one form, one very great form of spirituality, would be to erase the ego, to erase the sense of separateness. Wouldn't change the fact that you were physical. The star would still be the star. It would still be a body. It would still be manifest. It simply wouldn't be closed off. And as soon as you did that, assuming that you could do that, if you could erase the circle, you would have everything. You would know everything. You could do everything. You would be immortal. There'd be nothing to protect. So it'd be a fairly simple process, except, of course, that it might take you 1,000 lifetimes to accomplish. That circle is the most pernicious, the most persistent little thing you ever saw. So simple that it's almost invisible. Nobody ever pays attention to the circle. They only pay attention to the star. And they don't realize that the trouble comes from the circle. Just try sometime to erase the circle in yourself. You won't get very far, or not so easily anyway. And that's basically, as far as I can tell, the story of the pentacle as a symbol, as much of it as we can do now. And you have to remember that this pentacle that we're talking about, the reason that we're talking about it is because we're studying tarot, and in the next couple of weeks we're going to be studying the cards that belong to the suit of pentacles. And every time you pick up a card that has the pentacle on it, it is one perspective from which you can see all the things that we've talked about tonight. Every card in the suit of pentacles carries with it all of these things that we were talking about. That's the world. And when you look at a table, a chair, when you go to the movies, when you make love, when you eat breakfast, when you comb your hair, when you fight with your neighbor, all of these things have in it the two ends of the spectrum of you know, the pure, a pure spirit and pure contraction. Both possibilities. Always in tarot there's a continuum. Every card and every symbol is a continuum. Two ends with a huge, long, sliding scale of possibilities in the middle. And most everybody and most every situation can be found somewhere in the middle. Very rarely you find anyone at either of the two ends. So each one of the 10 numbers of a suit is a position somewhere along that continuum. And we'll talk about what each one of those is about, I guess, in the coming weeks. So have I reduced you to silence again? It sounds remarkably silent out there. I mean, it was so quiet, I thought I was talking to myself, which, of course, I probably was. Tell me something. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, am I talking to myself? Am I just doing this to hear myself talk? I don't know. I'm never sure of whether I'm making anything useful out of all this.
Well, I think you really get some of the silences because you make us think of different things and we go off in our own little, at least with me, like when you were talking about, you know, getting rid of the circle and becoming the one and being total expansion, know all, everything. In a way, then that's becoming nothing.
Yeah, but you don't become
if
nothing.
You're everything, you're the only thing, then you're really nothing because it doesn't matter anymore.
That's right. The thing that's nothing is your personal self.
Yeah.
That disappears. The body won't disappear. The mind won't disappear. The feelings won't disappear. Even the story of the body that you live in won't disappear. But your personal importance will. That will become nothing.
Yeah.
And that's something we can't give up. I don't know about you, but I certainly can't give it up.
No, And in the existence we're in, yeah, it would be sort of a bizarre concept. But that's why I got quiet, because I was thinking about it.
Well, guys, come on. Give me your feedback on some of this. Tell me your thoughts. Francine, I haven't heard from you lately. What have you been thinking as we've been going through all of this?
Well, while you were talking, it was making me think of the Two of Pentacles.
Okay.
With the continuum, like the figure eight.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then I started to think, like, in like a magical circle, you pull the circle up for protection while you're in between the two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to take the circle away, are you unprotected then?
Well, only if there was something to protect, and only if there was something to protect you from. Is there a negative force out there that you would fear?
Not personally, but.
So what would you be protecting then if you're not your person? If you personally have nothing to fear, then what would you be protecting?
I guess that is the reason why you pull it up, but just from being taught to do that, that's your protection.
Okay.
You know? That's what I was thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that there's a lot of people here who do circles. When you draw a circle, I mean, the circle is the primary symbol, actually. Not the star, but the circle is the primary symbol of the pagan spirituality. And let me see, I know Peggy is involved in that, and Scheherazade. I don't know, Kelly, are you at all involved in that in any way? Kelly?
No.
You're not, okay. There's some that are, some that aren't. But when you do a circle, Peggy, when you draw a circle, are you protecting yourself or what? What are you doing when
yes,
you draw a circle?
Yes, I'm protecting myself from imbalances, from even if you're traveling in the spirit worlds, from kleptotic influence.
Mm-hmm.
But I see part of the circle is creating a safe place, a place that also cuts you away from the daily worries, the daily troubles, because
mm-hmm.
you've developed a safe place where you can reach
mm-hmm.
for a higher knowledge and for, you know, dealing with the divine.
Mm-hmm.
So you've cut away the dross of the world around you, or you've attempted to.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, there is the concept of the kleptotic being. So if you're dealing in that area, yes, you
mm-hmm.
might need protection from that.
Okay.
So if you took the circle away and didn't do it
mm-hmm.
when you're in that safe space, then you would feel unprotected, right?
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's assume that you were a potent magician and you were out in the world, would you need to cast a circle, do a banishing ritual, any of that stuff in order to do your magic, or could you do your magic in the middle of anywhere that you were at? Would you be a magical being no matter what? Or do you need...
You
huh?
Sure you can.
Yeah, do you need robes? Do you need candles? Do you need knives and chalices?
Tools.
Huh?
Those are all tools. If you're that proficient, you could just do it mentally.
Yeah, you could do it mentally. You could do it without tools. You could do it without help. You could do it without anything. In fact, you really don't need any of that stuff to do magical things.
Right. No, those things all just help. They help you get in the right frame of mind.
It seems to me, I don't know if this is true or not, but it seems to me that most of what Drawing the Circle does is to include a group of people in a single focused action. It takes, if there were 10 people out there and you wanted to get them all moving in the same direction at the same time, if you wanted all of their minds to be focused on the same thing, you would draw a circle around them and hold their attention with a ritual act in the middle.
I think what you're also doing is you're stating, I'm cutting away the daily worries of the outside world, work world.
So you're performing a ritual act as a means of separating yourself from distraction. But what would happen if you had the strength of mind to live in a natural state of awareness of the kind that we're talking about? You're assuming that your normal state doesn't permit you to do that. When you're at work or when you're at home, when you're doing the ordinary things and you're engaged in what could be called a conversational universe, you are separated somehow from your magical self. And then in order to reestablish it, in order to give yourself a sense of being where you need to be, you have to separate yourself from the mundane world. But what if the mundane world weren't mundane at all? The whole idea of the pentacle is that the world is a magical place the way it stands.
Oh, no, I agree with that. But sometimes certain actions help you focus. Some of the accoutrements, I mean, you certainly don't need all of the things like wands or cups. But sometimes the very action of using them reinforces what you're doing.
It does.
So it's that physical reinforcement.
And then when the circle is over, when you have to, you know, take the circle down and part it, and then what do you do? The ordinary world rushes in on you like water, you know, flooding into a vacuum. All of a sudden the regular ordinary world crashes in on you again and you're just ordinary Peggy again?
No, but sometimes it does start reappearing.
Well, it does. Would you wish to be magical Peggy all the time? Or is the ordinary world a comfort that you would wish to return to if you could?
It depends. The ordinary work world, but under normal circumstances, yeah, I like the world. I like my life.
So, but you separate yourself from it when you draw the circle. Why is that? Why would you separate yourself from something that you like?
I'm using it as a focus for my actions. Circle is a focused area, and I can cut away my thoughts of, gosh, I should call this person back at work, or I really need to water the plants. That type of thing. I've got to wash the floor. Oh, God, that's my nemesis.
So in other words, the kind of thing that happens when most people sit down to meditate, which is that their minds are filled with fluttering, you know, ideas, their minds are filled with thoughts of ordinary things, and they can't get their mind to be quiet, which is what happens with most people when they sit down to meditate, and certainly that happens without a lot of practice. This is what happens when you're in your ordinary state. Your attention is just taken by ordinary things which you don't want to be bothered with, so you cast a circle in order to prevent that.
Casting a circle is a statement that I'm going to prevent it. And it's not necessary, but it helps to be a defining act.
Okay. So from a certain point of view, when you draw that circle around yourself, you're actually establishing a kind of freedom. Instead of a contraction.
It's my time not to need to worry about the daily, about paying my bills or washing the stupid floor.
How many of you have ever seen Yellow Submarine?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You remember at a certain point, I can't remember which one of the characters it is, you know, finds the hole, and he has a hole that he puts in his pocket, and he can jump through the hole anytime he wants?
Yep.
Well, in a way, what you do when you draw a circle is to create a hole that you can jump through and enter another world. It's like a hole that you have in your pocket. So it's not really a protection. It's simply an entry point. It's a doorway. The circle as a contraction, as a way of keeping you apart from all other things. That's not what's going on when you draw a circle in ritual work. Not in the kind of ritual we're talking about here, anyway. You're just opening up an entry point into another universe where you're freer and larger and more powerful than you were in the previous one, and where you can be purer as well. And then when you re-enter the other world, it's like coming out through a doorway and closing the door behind you. And when you close the door behind you, you are now firmly here, back in the ordinary world, and the other world has been closed off for a while. It's not really a matter of protection, it's just a matter of entry. That circle is not a gate or a wall or a fence. It's a door. No, or am I wrong about that? I mean, I know I get into arguments sometimes with my pagan friends about these things because they don't see it that way at all. But it certainly seems to me like that.
Well, it makes more sense when you look at it that way than as a protection. But that's how I was taught. Like, you always have to protect yourself.
I know.
You're going in between the worlds and you call in your watchtowers, the watchers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I know people who read tarot constantly from the perspective that somebody's out to get you. Somebody's got to put a hex on you. Somebody's put a spell on you. You got to get rid of the negativity. You got to, because they're so concerned with that themselves that they think that it's universally applicable. And when they read for me, not realizing that that doesn't concern me in the least, that's how they see things. And so that's what they do. And of course, I suppose they teach that to their students. But it's, I don't know. I think it's just an unfortunate kind of teaching.
I don't know. For me, when I'm doing the quarters,
mm-hmm.
if I've been in, let's say, a state of emotional turmoil,
mm-hmm.
when I do the West, it's a realization or a reminder that my emotions should be balanced, and it's sort of easily going into a calm sea.
Mm-hmm.
If my thoughts are in turmoil, and I do the East, I just see those jangling swords being blown away.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that action is part of helping set up my circle, and that, in a sense, is a protection, if nothing more than from yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're protecting you from your own problem. You're protecting yourself from your own inner state,
mm-hmm.
your own normal inner state. The thing you're actually worried about is not coming from outside; it's coming from inside. You're just protecting yourself against normal Peggy.
Right, or against, you know, if I'm really upset, against, hopefully, abnormal Peggy.
Well, there's that too, right. Anyway, all of these things are really not so much about the pentacle. All I was trying to do was to find out what the symbol of a circle was, which is a whole other story. I guess if you have the circle taken as a separate issue, you're really getting into the issue of cups, which is a whole other story, and we shouldn't be going there at this particular point. We've actually gotten to the point, in a way, where the lesson is over, and this is kind of a discursive place. It's a place where we can play around and enjoy. How many of you would prefer, how many of you like coins as compared to credit cards? Do you like the jingle of coins in your pocket? Do you like the weight, you know, of dimes and nickels and stuff, or is it just a nuisance?
Actually, for me, give me a check cashing card as long as there's money in the account anytime.
Uh-huh. Right, it's funny. Because that's the symbol of the coin is such a beautiful symbol, but it's old now, it's worn out. It's actually part of another universe. It's so interesting. This world has gotten to be filled with zapping lights, and this world has gotten to be so filled with wands and swords that pentacles has almost become irrelevant. I mean, the world of technology has reduced pentacles to an abstract. Value is no longer to be seen in the solid universe. It's to be seen in electronic transfer.
In information rather than in something tangible?
That's right. And even information isn't seen in an intangible form. Information is fleeting images that come and go on a screen that disappear and appear from databases and cyberspace that you can't even really quite describe. It doesn't really have a physical existence. In a way, the purely physical universe, the universe of physical value and physical sensation and physical evidence of things, is actually, in a way, kind of crumbling. We're actually walking into a world where the physical becomes transmuted. You're walking into a world of cloning. where a certain kind of order, a certain kind of almost purely magical use of the mind is transforming the physical into an abstract. A person is now getting to be seen not as a human being, as an individual human being produced by natural process, but as the manipulation of a series of zeros and ones on a computer, as a series of genetic codes. Do you think of yourself as a genetic code, simply elaborated into whatever it is you see in the mirror? Would you feel more comfortable, do you think, as a genetic code than as a person?
Well, I think part of our environments are genetic code, and they do set up certain patterns for us that we can live with, grow out of. There might be genetic codes that deal with intelligence, short temper, all sorts of things. So yes,
absolutely.
We are part of a genetic code.
Now the interesting thing is that short temper, fatness, tallness, blondness, green-eyedness, all of those things which used to be simply a physical fact. You're tall, you're blonde, you're green-eyed, you're whatever you happen to be. Those were physical facts. Now they are nothing but abstracts that can be manipulated. You want a green-eyed, purple-haired, three-armed, two-headed, you know, child with an IQ of 9,000? All we have to do is just play around with it, push a few buttons, and we can create anything we want. The physicality of the universe actually has become subordinated to the world of swords. One of the things that science does so beautifully is to elevate the mind at the expense of the physical. Think what happens when you live in a universe. I read a science fiction story once, a long time ago, where the ultimate addiction was to the pleasure of a dream. And people would go and plug themselves in, you know, they go to these dream emporiums and they lie down in a cubicle and they get get plugged in. And they would then dream and they would lie there and they would be fed intravenously. And the addiction got so intense for so many people that their physical bodies simply became unworkable. They became pale and weak, flaccid. They preferred to live in their dreams than to live in the real world. Because in their dreams, they could do anything. They could program their dreams. They could make anything happen that they wanted. They could realize every desire and actually experience it in a dream. Whereas in the physical universe, they couldn't do that. There were limits. Would you like to live in a dream where everything came out well? Marcy, you were talking about the people that you know, the people you read for, who want things to come out right.
Mm-hmm.
What if you could have everything come out right?
Well, then, obviously, we create these experiences to be able to grow and to find the divine within us. If we already had that experience, we wouldn't have to be here. Isn't that true?
No, not true at all.
Okay.
You have to be here. And that's a whole other story. I'm not going to try and get into that. That's a yogic consideration, whether you have to be here or not. But if you could be here in such a way that you could avoid all unpleasantness, you could just be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Would you? Would you plug yourself into a happiness machine and then just live happily forever after?
Oh, I probably would. Definitely,
yeah.
Because I have been, let's put it this way, I'd much rather enjoy the experience of happiness and peace as opposed to the antithesis of that. So
mm-hmm.
I would be a Pollyanna, and yes, I would definitely accept that.
That's very interesting. So you would give up the physical world with its hardships in return for a
mm-hmm.
construct that
a
gave
heaven.
You satisfaction.
Well, yeah, within a New York second, I wouldn't have to think much about it.
That's very funny. Let me take a poll, just out of curiosity. Francine, would you do that? Would you give yourself over to pure happiness, if you could have it, to having everything go your way without, you know, a cloud in the sky, if it meant, you know, simply plugging yourself into something that would allow you to do that?
I think, like, at first instinct you would do that because everybody wants to be happy and have everything that they ever wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But would we really be happy if we were...
Yeah, you'd be happy. You'd be guaranteed. You'd be guaranteed that you could have whatever made you...
What's the sense of living like that if we're not going to experience things that are... It's hard to put your finger on it, but...
Mm-hmm. But you would consider it.
It would be nice for a month.
And you don't think it would get addictive? If when you had to get back out...
It would get boring, wouldn't it?
Huh?
It would get boring.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know whether it would or not. I couldn't say, never having had it happen. But just the thought doesn't bother you about just kind of plugging yourself into a happiness machine? Living in a dream state perpetually where there were no nightmares, only happy dreams?
It would be nice, but you would be like a vegetable.
Mm-hmm, yeah, you would. Your physicality would drain away. You would have no physicality. You would only be the experience of some pre-programmed idea of what's good for you. There wouldn't be the vulnerability that a physical thing has. That's one of the things about being an individual and about the reason why protection comes into the issue with the pentacle. Because you're vulnerable. As a physical being, you can be impacted. Other individual beings pound on you. The individual...
Right, and it's like, that's not that much fun, being pounded upon.
Right. But that's part of being physical. That's part of being manifest. You take your chances. You're no longer an abstract being living in an abstract universe. You're now a real being living in a real universe. And there are risks in that. But you would give that up for the abstraction of happiness?
Yeah, I'm tired of being pounded upon.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Well, that's the issue with pentacles. Pentacles is risk. Pentacles is danger. Pentacles is rising and falling, living and dying. Pentacles involves pain as well as pleasure. Pentacles involves all the contrasts. Pentacles involves figure and ground, which is a psychological term from Gestalt therapy. Pentacles involves the idea of seeing one thing on the background of another. And always when there's contrast, there's difficulty and pain and as part of it. You like the ocean? You think the ocean's beautiful? What happens when there's a tidal wave and you get blown away? What happens when you drown? You like beautiful sky? How do you like falling from it and hitting the ground? You know, all the things that have good parts also have bad parts. All the things that can help you can also hurt you. And eventually you'll see some of each. You're not willing to do that, to live a physical life?
Okay, I changed my mind.
No, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm just asking because the thing is, the thing about pentacles, the thing about the universe of the real, is that it's absolutely overwhelmingly magnificent. But it's dangerous. And that's included. So all the people who come to you for readings, all the people who want things to come out their way, in a way, by asking for that, by having that implicit in the questions that they ask, the reasons for coming to a reading, the implicit request is for things to go their way and to avoid the drama that makes them who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, we've spoken about, people want to come to people like us so that they can be able to know if they make a right or a left, that they're going to be safe, and their safety consists of that they're going to feel comfortable and there's going to be no surprises and all is well.
That's right. And the whole pleasure of this universe is that it's uncertain. It's the risk that gives it its energy. I don't know, I guess maybe that's just a personal statement. I couldn't really back that up, but just a personal feeling. When I look at the world and I experience, I'm like, right now I've got a toothache. And I've had this toothache. It's not really a toothache so much as, I mean, I had a little bit of oral surgery and my mouth is sore as hell. But
did you have a root canal?
No, I didn't have a root canal, luckily. But I had some you know, this scraping around, you know, in there with knives and things, and it wasn't pleasant. So it hurts. But the funny thing is, at this point anyway, with minor pains, I don't know if I could do it with major pains, but one of the interesting things about a minor pain is that it immediately brings you to the present moment. It roots you in this very time and place. It's very hard to pay attention to anything else when your tooth hurts.
But this really upsets me to hear that you're in pain. So what is that, the cup part of me or the pinnacle part of me?
I don't know what it is, dear. I don't know what it is that upsets you with that. Except possibly the you know, kind of empathy. What, you know, empathy is putting yourself in the other person's position and feeling whatever it is that they feel. So if you can feel my pain and don't like pain yourself, then you would feel bad for me. But the thing, interesting thing is that I'm sitting here with this pain now, and I'm working on enjoying it. I mean, it tells me that my teeth are real. It tells me my mouth is real. It tells me that I'm real. I'm not just a talking head sitting here, you know, discussing things over the phone. And it has real implications for me, what I'm saying. And if I didn't have the physical sensation, if I were experiencing perfect health, what I'm saying now would have less impact on me. I wouldn't necessarily believe myself. I would think possibly that I was spouting. Something interesting about pain.
Well,
yeah?
Happiness isn't... I don't think that happiness, or maybe I'm thinking more along of peace, but peace and contentment to me don't necessarily come from what happens to you. Like, did everything turn out okay? I found peace and grief even.
Absolutely.
And it was horrible and gut-wrenching, but it was right at the time, and I wouldn't I don't look forward to doing it again, but does that make sense? I don't know.
Yes, it does make sense. It makes perfect sense.
Was that Kelly?
Yeah.
But you've just come off of feeling real pain. I mean, not being able to breathe, I suspect, and having your chest, you know, feel like I can't even imagine.
No, but I wasn't unhappy. I mean, and I missed stuff. But you know, I think happiness and I don't know. Maybe I was raised around my mom too long, but you know, every day of my life, that woman told me that happiness was a choice, and by God, I could choose it. So, and I got it, you know? I don't know. But
yeah.
I that's why I wouldn't hook up to a dream machine, is I don't know that that would really work.
I know. You would not learn what you needed to learn if you were hooked up to a dream machine.
Well, yeah, and also, I don't know that... I really believe that you can find... I do think that the pinnacle's part of life, that it is so magic. I mean, it's so magnificent that I don't think I'd want to miss that part of it. God, that sounds so hokey.
No, it's not hokey. You know, the interesting thing is that Martha was supposed to be here this evening and she couldn't make it, so she asked me earlier to get her a tape of this class. And I'm taping it now. And I was thinking for a while, maybe I should just turn the tape off because we're sort of rambling now. It's not kind of a planned class, and we're not really getting anywhere in a certain sort of way. And it's not systematic, and I don't know if there's anything to be learned here or not. And I'm going to have to, you know, send a tape of this, you know, to Martha, and she's going to listen to it. And I don't know what she's going to make of it. But my sense is that this is important somehow. You know, this not knowing quite where to take it, not knowing quite what to do with it, there's a certain vulnerability in that, too. I took a chance and let it get away from me, and let's just see what happens if I just throw it out there and see what comes back to me as a result. And in the stumbling and the not being sure and the not smoothness, there's something real, too. And to me, there's more... presence. You guys are more here with me in this than you would be if I were simply talking away at a great rate and you were occasionally saying, good for you, yay, Wald, you know. That doesn't do it. There's no reality in that. So
I think it's appropriate to mention also that for me, talking about the pentagram, the Hierophant keeps coming up. And number five, which is self-mastery. And you're exploring, along with everybody in the group, we're kind of exhausting the possibilities and processing our feelings. And that, to me, is helping me, it's grist of the mill, to be able to cultivate the self-mastery that we're all here to experience.
It would be nice if that would happen. That truly would. And it would also be nice if at the end of all this, we're coming up on 2 hours, and it would be nice if at the end of 2 hours of talking about all this stuff, if the pentacle were somehow more real for you than it was, if the pentacle achieved some kind of depth, if the pentacle had three dimensions instead of one or two, and led to interesting places instead of simply, oh, it's pentacles is about money. And I think we probably did that. We left the door open, the kind of door we were talking about when you walk between the worlds, when you set up a circle. We set up a circle when we get together here, just by showing up, just by calling in. There's a circle set up. And what we did here is just kind of open a door to musings. And we stand right now in a place different than where we were when we started. And I don't know whether you have a sense, I mean, each of you sits in your own rooms, and there are things going on around you, and there are people and actions and energies and, you know, all sorts of things going on around you. But I personally, while I'm in the same boat, I personally feel protected from all of that at this moment. It seems as though I feel sort of like in a slightly different world. I have in no way left my body. I have in no way left the place that I'm sitting. I know who I am. I can feel myself, and that pain in my jaw reminds me of that constantly. But the feeling of being in a magical place is very strong right this second.
Remember I had mentioned that after class the next day, I always woke up and I had a natural high.
Uh-huh.
And today, even in the silence, or tonight in the silence, I felt elevating my consciousness, that I was leaving my body, and I feel that the divine has blessed us all.
Well, it does. And you know what? We did it. It's not like some power came down on us. We are responsible for opening up whatever grace descends, whatever sense of divinity or whatever sense of peace, whatever sense of spirit comes down. We did that ourselves, if it happened at all. Now, each of us has a different sensation of this. Francine, I'll ask you, because you're sort of the newest to the group and haven't heard as much of this as some of the others have, but what's your feeling about what we were just saying? Is there any sense of that at all for you?
As far as, like, a magical sense?
Yeah, about being included in the magical energy.
Absolutely.
Yeah? Because that's strong for me, and I was hoping that it would be so for everybody, but couldn't be sure.
Absolutely, and I think you were saying that you didn't want to send that tape with us just rambling on. That helps me to learn by listening to everybody else's feelings. And earlier when we first came in, I don't know who it was that was talking about the last card, the world or whatever.
Yeah, that was Marcy.
Yeah, she felt different about it. Well, I felt the same way now after taking that class on the world or whatever. It gave me a different insight, and it's the same way with sharing everybody else's energy and how they see things. And
yeah.
Like you said, we created that magical existence of here.
That's right. Whatever energy we have between us now, we created among ourselves. It wasn't given to us.
Because the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and we're all divine, and you helped us to be able to, as the facilitator, you expanded that divinity.
Yeah, I suppose that's partially true, but I couldn't have done it, obviously, alone. That's not a thing. Well, actually, even that's not true. I could have sat here in my chair and done this for myself. I do things like that periodically. Can you do that? Can you sit, Marcy? Can you sit by yourself and create a magical space without using a wand or a robe or, you know, or any kind of...
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go the gamut, and I will feel such ecstasy and such adulation such grace and such enlightenment that I am so, so very blessed.
Well, if you can do that, you certainly are. Shahrazad, you live in an interesting situation. I mean, you have certainly trials and tribulations of your own. Can you invoke a magical energy when you need it?
Yeah. Most of the time I can. I think the only time that I can't is if I'm really let myself get very stressed so that I can't bring myself into focus.
Yeah.
But most of the time when I need to, I can, and I've meditated for years and that sort of thing, so I can, you know, put energy around me to protect myself, because things can be very chaotic around me.
Yeah, yeah. And the thing is that for all of, it's not in the face of or in antagonism to the physical realities of one's life. It's in the harmony with one's physical realities that the spirit comes to us.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I think even when we're talking about connecting, you know, at this group, you know, I can, you know, energy is energy and space doesn't really matter with it. And you can just, yeah, I can feel it and I can actually feel it. And the difference between when we started with this call and where we are now is just, it's sort of resonating.
Yeah, yeah. And what I'm hoping for out of all of this is that we have that sense, which each of us seems to have, without in any sense having given up or abdicated from our physical reality. We are who we are, our bodies are what they are, our lives and the events in our lives have not changed. Nothing has changed but our perception. Nothing has changed but the inner state. The star pulses. The circle around the star hasn't changed any. Our contractions, our limitations, our needs, our fears, our vulnerabilities, they're all still there. But inside of that, somehow, there's a pulse right this moment. And that's the power that the pentacle has. In the middle of all of this, you can just be filled with the joy of being alive.
Yeah, it's like a big group hug.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Oh, God. I'm one of these days, guys, I'm going to have to change my profession to become a preacher.
That makes much fun.
Yeah, I know. They have the license to do that. They can be as pompous as they like, and they call it spirituality, you know. So anyway, I guess on that cheerful note, it's probably time to say goodnight. And does anybody have any last questions, technical or otherwise, that should be cleared up at this point?
It's not a question. But what I want to say is that happy birthday to you, and may this birthday bring you all that is wonderful, healthy, beautiful back to you tenfold.
Oh, thank you, Marcy. I had I forgot about that.
Well, you have a few days till Sunday, right?
That's true. I do have a few days till Sunday. You remembered and I forgot.
And I will send you healing light and blessings. We all will right now, right?
Well, thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. That's a lovely comment. And I guess then probably we should say goodnight. It's been a long 2 hours, and it's time. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Blessings to everyone. Kelly, feel well. And
yes, Kelly, I hope. Are you completely better now? Or is it all gone, or are there traces left?
Yeah, I'm darn close.
Good. I'm glad.
You sound pretty good, right?
Okay, guys. See you next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.